Welcome to the next episode of Flint Co. Talks. It's your boy Dano, and I have my good friend Mike McCallum in the house today. Mike, how are you, man?
I'm doing really well, Dan. Really, really pleasure to be here, and I'm very grateful that you asked me to come out today. So
I'm glad that you're here. I'm glad to have you. I'm excited for our topic. Those listening, Mike is the Director of Operations for our renewable energy operation. And can you tell us a little bit about your role right now, Mike?
Yeah, thanks for the intro. So, like you said, I am the Director of Operations for our renewable energy group, and formerly known as Flint Co. Renewable Energy. Flint Co. Renewable Energy is an internal joint venture between Alberici Constructors and Flint Co. And right now, the obligation that I'm taking on is to build up teams to go execute work that we are acquiring within the organization. So putting teams of experts together, lining up all of our internal resources, processes, procedures to go out and successfully execute work. So
wow,
pretty exciting. Lots going on, but really engaging and exciting time period for us.
Yeah, it really is. It's super exciting to even think about renewable energy. So before we get too much further, I just want you to, when people say renewable energy or hear renewable energy, their mind goes a bunch of different places. Can you help direct us on where our mind should go when we talk about renewable energy? Like, kind of what does it mean to you and the operation and kind of what you're trying to build?
Sure. I think the textbook definition of renewable energy is a process whereby, you know, electricity is generated utilizing a fuel source that can, by nature, reproduce itself. So the wind, flowing water, or the in our case, the sun's rays. These are not something that we need to mine and deplete within our environment. They are something that is through the course of nature able to be harnessed and utilized to produce electricity. I think that's the textbook definition of it. I won't go against Webster's. I think that's a pretty solid definition. But as it refers to and as it applies to FRE, Flint Co. Renewable Energy, really where our focus is going to be on is the solar photovoltaic market and the battery energy storage market that coincides with that. So really, we're building up expertise to approach and execute within that solar PV and battery energy market.
That's very helpful just to understand when you think about it. I love what you said about the mining part, about not having to mine anymore and things that are already there, right? Sunshine is there. I've seen it pretty much every day my whole life for the last 45 years. So
you're living in the right place, too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. So why did we choose to get into this market sector, right? I mean, between Alberici, between Flint Co., it's like we have area offices, we have markets, and this is one that's, you know, just within the last 4 or 5 years. Can you walk us down the path on how we got here?
Yeah, it's been a pretty interesting and winding road. You know, I think both organizations within the company have a pretty solid and historic resume when it comes to traditional energy construction. I think both of our firms, you know, have a legacy of success within the fossil areas, whether it's a fossil-fired boiler with environmental controls, whether it's a steam turbine, whether it's a gas turbine, whether it's boilers being built and utilized for heating a university campus. I think our organizations have a lot of that DNA inherently that we've built up and worked hard to be successful at over the course of several decades. We traditionally, every 3 years within the organization, go through a strategic planning effort. And back in 2020, we sat in the room and looked ourselves in the eyes and said, this is what we've been successful at. Is this what's going to win us, you know, opportunities in the future? And I think we looked very hard at multiple different areas where the energy sector was moving. And we decided really to take a hard look at solar PV construction. And really, I mean, it's kind of interesting because I think the initial knee-jerk reaction was that solar is easy. you know, there's just a cornfield out there. You just, you know, put a bunch of posts in the ground, put some panels on it, and, mm-hmm. you know, it cranks out electricity.
Good to go.
Yeah. How could we be competitive in that market?
Everybody can do this, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I think the initial knee jerk was that probably not something that we want to look into, but we decided let's dive in and research, do our homework, do our diligence, come out on the other end with a path forward. And lo and behold, 9 months later, after we spent a lot of time and resources internally and externally to really analyze where this market was going, we thought, you know, there's a big pie out there and the pie is getting bigger. Mm-hmm. And the reality is that, it's not as easy as it looks. There are challenges and complications, maybe different than those challenges and complications that come throughout the normal course of the construction that we are typically used to. Mm-hmm. But similar mindsets are going to be required. Similar skill sets are going to be required to overcome those challenges. And it's something that we can be successful in. And we saw, like I mentioned, we saw this pie getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And we decided back at the end of that strategic planning effort at the end of 2020 and beginning of 2021, that this was a market that we were going to go all in on build up from the ground up. So it took a lot of brain power, a lot of convincing, a lot of studies, mm-hmm. a lot of presentations.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, we decided to take that first step and establish a market and, you know, go out and look for a leader to run that market.
What a great story, right? Thinking one thing, studying, finding another, and then still wanting to jump, you know, jump in feet first, right? All the way in. I wanted to ask you, like, your role in the enterprise in 2020 was?
So at that point in time, I was probably within my first year of taking over the responsibility of business development for our energy group. Mm-hmm. And as probably a lot of people are aware, you know, the successes that we had within our energy group and our market were traditionally based within that, you know, fossil, gas, coal, you know, plant retrofits or new construction. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the fact of the matter was that, you know, projects that were being developed were being canceled. Companies were looking at and utilities were looking at what, you know, amount of money do they need to put into their existing facilities to meet, you know, the environmental, you know, regulations and demands versus closing and transitioning into renewable sources, primarily wind and solar. And so at that time, a little bit of a rough time for myself because yeah. the market was shifting as it was. But it was also, you know, I looked at it as an opportunity to really look at the energy market, you know, in a grander scale and, you know, help with that, you know, research and you know, promotion of the solar and battery energy market. So it was an interesting transition period, but was able to really do the homework and help get to where we are now, which was very useful.
So you were part of that team that helped develop this plan and all that.
Yeah,
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So the role that you have today, like, why would you say you're in it now? Like, are you all in? Really, fully bought into this FRE or RE renewable energy?
Yeah, I mean, at the time when we decided to make this transition. I had a really engaging conversation with our COO at the time and my boss, who was the market leader of our energy group. And as much as you can slam your fist with a Mike Burke, I said, "Hey, I'd really like to be, you know, one of the players that helps push this market forward." Mm-hmm. It was something that I had spent some time, my own personal time, researching prior to going down this path mm-hmm. on our strategic planning, and I don't have a background that would lend itself to somebody that would say, yeah, that makes sense. You know, you've transitioned clearly into this role of, you know, working in solar. My background, while it's largely been in energy, I've spent most of my career, working for either manufacturers or EPCs that produce the equipment and build, the facilities for, fossil energy.
Okay. Yeah.
And I took a lot from that, It's a very interesting market, very character building, offered me a lot of opportunities throughout my lifetime. But I got to the point where, you know, you start to understand the impacts of what you're doing. And while it may be really interesting, engaging, and fun, and complicated, and you know, all those things that make a career, you know, really fulfilling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had to look myself and my family in the eyes and say, is this really something that I can stand behind?
Mm. Wow.
And, you know, there's a coal plant in the town where my wife and I got married, and we go back there every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
And I drive by that plant, and I have very mixed feelings mm-hmm. about driving by there. And I have kids, and when you get to that point in your life, you do start to take on the thought process of, you know, is what I'm doing directly impacting positively or negatively the future that my children will have? And I truly believe, and really the team that we're putting together also truly believes, that this is a solution. It's not the solution.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to solve all the world's problems. But it is a step in a different direction that I personally believe, and the team we're putting together personally believes,
mm-hmm.
Can help solve a situation that we feel is urgent to resolve.
That's a great way to put it. You think of, I've been to different conferences, and you hear things like they're talking about the Paris Climate Accord and different things that the United States is trying to do or be a part of or not be a part of to try to improve the environment, right? And you look at all the other countries in the world that aren't really heeding that advice and what's happening in their places or what, you know, kind of the indirect or the strays, you know, that it's causing issues in other places. So I love that you saw that opportunity, looked at yourself, and then went and told Mike. Mike's a reasonable guy. Went and talked with him and said, hey, man, I want to be a part of this. So fast forward 3 years, right? It's been 3 years since we kind of said, hey, we're going to do this. You know, how do you go from starting from basically ground zero, from thinking, man, this is going to be easy, right? I'm sure you like to retrace those words at some point. And to today, you know, 3 years later, like, where are we? What kind of team have we built? Like, you're talking about your team and that they believe in it. Tell me a little bit about kind of where we are today and what makes us hopefully a powerhouse in this industry.
Yeah, I could talk for hours and hours about our team. And that's really why I love doing this.
Mm-hmm.
My number one, if I listed out why I come to work every day, the number one on that list, without withdrawal is the people that I get to work with. And you know, that starts at the top with Rob Marchetti. Rob was hired, to be, the VP and market leader for Flinco Renewable Energy. And, you know, Rob has been there and done that. And not only that, so he brings the credibility, right? So, mm-hmm. Hey, I've been there. I've been on the ground floor. I've built some companies. Those companies have been successful. Companies have been acquired. And I went and started building another company. So he's got that, resume. But the thing that sold me on Rob as a leader and his capabilities to put a team together, and really when I fully bought into this group, was during the RE Plus conference last fall.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say 60,000 plus or minus visitors at this conference. We spent 2.5 days walking around the streets of Las Vegas, and that guy could not walk 20 steps without a group of people stopping, mm-hmm. shaking his hand. Hey, how you doing? Great to see you. He knew their names. He knew, you know, what they were up to.
Yeah.
He was asking about their work. I mean, this was over and over and over. And, you know, he's made a positive impact on a lot of lives, a lot of careers, a lot of people. And, you know, I saw that impact that he made, mm-hmm. and I thought, all right, this guy is not doing it. He's not coming here so he can go brag, mm-hmm. and talk about what he accomplished. He's doing it because he believes in it. He wants to build people. He wants to build a group. And he's not only just got it on his resume, but you just see it when you see the engagement of the people that mm-hmm. he comes across. So
that's awesome.
So really, you know, the team starts at the top with Rob. You know, as we've built out, and we've acquired some work, it is, you know, obviously incumbent upon us to start, you know, growing our areas of expertise and our capabilities. So, you know, we've grown teams both kind of in the back office side of things for business development and our contracting expertise. And most notably, we're really establishing ourselves with some engineering and design expertise. And then on the operations side of the house, really on our folks that are going out and going to be putting the boots on the ground and getting the work done. So at the moment, you know, we've got a group of nearing 20 individuals.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, that doesn't count all the support services that, you know, rest within, you know, the organization's, you know, back offices that we have relied on and that have supported us 100% plus to get this moving. There's been a lot of challenges. We're new. There's a lot of new people learning, you know, a new company. Mm-hmm. Some of them are coming in with some experience. Some of them are coming in with, you know, decades of experience, within this market. But, you know, I talk about that way that we approach, you know, our hiring and our understanding of, you know, values and work ethic. And, you know, it's been an absolute pleasure, to build these teams that we've built, because, we have established, a real roster of all stars. It's pretty amazing. And that's, you know, I talk about that list of why you come to work, really genuinely great, hardworking, mm-hmm. You know, individuals that all believe in the same thing.
Right. That have probably all had that conversation or had that moment of a reckoning. Like when, like you said, you're looking in the mirror and you're like, hey man, is what I'm doing really, is it really going to be good? And I love what you said that like, this isn't the end all be all, and this is going to solve all the problems, right? But this is a formidable solution to getting energy, right? And to be able to produce energy in a way that's not going to create all kinds of other challenges, I guess is the easiest way to put it.
Exactly. You know, I'm a firm proponent of, you know, multiple solutions to one problem. I'm firmly aware that you still have to mine materials to create the components that go into a solar plant.
Sure.
And at the end of its lifetime, something has to be done with those components. Mm-hmm. So the whole process isn't solved. It's not an end all be all. But it is a technology that is continuing to advance at a very fast pace. Mm-hmm. It's proven, it works. There are downstream positive impacts that, you know, growing this market will have, you know, based on my beliefs of the science and how it can, you know, increase air quality and reduce, you know, carbon emissions. So I think that this is a monumental step in the right direction. And, you know, we want to be part of that. And it's kind of interesting, too, because if you look back and, you know, the founder, and I'll talk for a minute on the Alberici side, you know, John Alberici has sustainability built into his blood. Mm-hmm. If you look at the office building that he retrofitted almost 2 decades ago now, the whole facility and the grounds are built around sustainability, mm-hmm. To the point where it appears that we're not mowing the grass because he's trying to reestablish the prairie lands around there.
Yeah.
And you know, we get funny comments from people, but you know, there's a method to his madness. And, you know, whether it's, you know, the bees and the honey that he produces, or, you know, the solar and wind power that we use at the office to generate our electricity. You know, I think it's built into the organization, and it's almost a natural progression of where we need to go and what we needed to do as a company.
Yeah. And then when you have that moment, you're like, this is, right, the natural step. This is the step we should be taking. This is what we should be doing. So I love to hear that. Yeah, and I've been to the office. I was there a couple of months ago when we ran into each yeah. other, and I was thinking that, looking at the outside, I can only imagine what people say around you. But then when they hear the story, they're like, oh, okay, I see. Yeah, John A. is on a level that nobody else is on. It's like, hey, get on our level, man.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
level
right.
up.
You should come by when we do the control burns. That's it. That's an interesting time.
Yeah, send me an invite on Outlook and I'll right. come up there for a little bit. But so one of the other questions I wanted to ask you was kind of, you know, as a guy that's worked in commercial and construction for 20 something years, like when I hear about renewable energy type jobs, like how do these jobs come to fruition, or what, can you walk us through just a little bit kind of what that looks like, or when somebody realizes, or an entity or whoever says, hey, this is a viable option. How do we find out about those things? You know, if those are trade secrets we can share, but I'd really like to understand a little bit of that.
Yeah. And this is actually one of the areas I think that we are continuing to shift our perspective on, because the solar renewables market is largely developer driven.
Okay.
And I think as an enterprise, I mean, we traditionally have done most of our, energy work, with private or public entities, but somebody who's not a developer. and we've had to go through a little bit of a learning curve on what what that looks like from the inception of the idea through the execution of the contract, and now as we're going to actually build some of our first projects. So it's highly relationship driven, and I think that's precisely how we became engaged with the client that we have now. I think there are lots of options out there for these clients, but those traditional options are becoming log jammed with the amount of work. So it dials back to those relationships, and how can you get those relationships established early on, and present yourself as somebody who is who you can't move forward without. I really think that's where we're trying to go with this. We're trying to establish ourselves as somebody who can assist and help and be a partner at an early stage. And we're, a potential partner of ours would say, these guys have been so valuable to get to this point. I'm not sure how we could pivot at this point. They're crucial to our success.
Mm-hmm.
Pivoting from this point to go out to the market would be foolish.
Right.
So we're trying to really establish ourselves and understand this whole nuanced relationship with developers. I think our traditional way of doing business was, okay, we know, utility XYZ is coming out with an RFP. Let's learn what we can. Let's put a great price together, figure out how we can design this thing and put a great proposal forward.
Mm-hmm.
The establishment of yourself in a partnership with these developers occurs much earlier on in the project development phase, and approaching clients that we have understood that we share values with,
mm-hmm.
and think that we can maintain long-term relationships with is really how we're setting ourselves up to succeed and really get ourselves established in the market. I know that between Flinko and Alberisi, I don't know what the current stat is, but a large majority of our work comes from repeat clients.
Yeah. Over 80%.
I was going to say 80. I think it's hovering around that mark. That's one thing we're not trying to change.
Right.
We don't want to go out and do this job for this guy, that job for that guy. We want to be that partner, established partner, that, our clients rely on for consistent performance year over year, project over project. And like I said, that starts really early on in this development phase to the point where they think that they can't move on without you. Now, after that point, you got to go out and do what you said you're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
So we're starting that phase right now.
Yeah.
And I have no doubts that we're going to, put our money where our mouth is and, come out of, our first jobs that we're establishing right now very successfully.
So I've got like six things I just wrote down.
Sure.
That I want to be able to talk about. So it's surprising to me to think developer driven, right? And when you had been working for public entities, like when the RFP's published is kind of when you're like, okay, that's when we're going to put together this proposal. Mm-hmm. What kind of team can we have? But if, developer driven, you have the relationship, you can get in early and making yourself indispensable. Like, I love that. It's like, hey, we've been a part of this for so long, and it's totally different from when you're just grab an RFP and respond. The owner is only a legion at that point to the designer. And it's kind of like, well, whoever, depending on the owner, depends on whether they're a quality or they're a safety or if they're a, low dollar number before you're even going to get a nod. And yep. There just might be entities that you'll never be able to work for because we know we're never going to be the cheapest person on the market.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. So that's pretty insightful. Like, I love to hear that. So when you say we're working with developers, this is the first question I'll get to, but you're saying work with developers. Do these developers work all over the country, or do they work in the Midwest, or do they work in the South Central, or kind of what are you seeing from folks we're trying to engage with?
I think all of the above.
Okay.
There's regional. I think there's national. I think we are trying to limit our engagement at this point, overextend our capabilities to commit. But I think that the developers that we are, spending time with now are nationally focused. So from the East Coast to the West Coast, North to South, there are developer driven. There's developer driven work in all 50 states. Interestingly enough, I mean, I think even some of the regional players are becoming larger. Mm-hmm. And at this point, there's a lot of international money coming in. So a lot of these developers don't even aren't even established that well here in the States. So we've had some interaction with some international developers, some international money that's looking to come in. Little bit more challenging on the relationship side. Mm-hmm. So we're working to figure out some of the nuances with that. But we've also made some steps, internally to help understand that better and to be able to react and help, give the owners and these developers what they want. So really at this point in time, real limited in scope, trying mm-hmm. to really find those that we align with and that have, I guess what I also say is that they don't have these expectations of, going from zero to a billion overnight. They have growth expectations that are more in line with ours as well. Mm-hmm. So that we can potentially help them grow out at similar rates and levels that we would like to grow.
It's interesting to think also just about the international money, right? When you think about that, you think about different cultures colliding with the American culture, the North American culture. It's kind of probably two completely different things and how business gets done, I'm sure. Like in the opportunity working for Alberici in Mexico for 2 years, we had the same thing, right? There was different protocols we had to follow when we went to owners' meetings, and there was, if we had a tough conversation, we needed to have the pre-meeting before the meeting to be able to get everything hashed out. So when you ask the question, the owner could answer, confidently that, hey, this is the path forward. And it's like, thank you so much. That's what we needed. Yeah. That's the direction we needed. That's where we're headed. So I can only imagine the conversations that y'all are having, you and Rob are having as you talk to these different folks and try to hone in on who are the right people to work for in the right area, jobs that are going to make, right? Something that over the last 4 or 5 years, since March of 2020, commercial projects have been on the teeter on through the pandemic on, is it going to go or is it not going to go? So what's, of all the jobs that you hear about or all the jobs you see, what would you say the percentage is that actually go? If we're talking to four different developers and they're looking at eight different jobs, are all eight going to go or maybe one of them goes?
The percentage is probably in the 50% range.
Wow.
But right now what it's largely driven on, and if we go back to the pandemic era, mm-hmm. The success was largely driven around, can we get the stuff?
Yeah.
Can we get the panels? Can we get the cable? Right, all the commodities that are required to build these plants really was the logjam. What we're more transitioning into is that there's still a logjam, particularly on high voltage equipment, anything that requires a lot of copper, still a bit of a logjam there. But I think that's been built more into the model now, mm-hmm. where developers are going to struggle to actually pull things together is finding the EPCs to build these things. I read something a couple weeks ago that referred to a 3x increase in EPC bandwidth in order to meet the expected growth in the PV market. And really a lot of these statistics were kind of moving in this direction back when we decided to, make our transition, but the line has gotten more steep, the growth is exponential. And, you know, really that transition from the commodity restriction to people restriction is one of those challenges that I think is first and foremost in our minds as we look at, you know, what we can manage to take on. And that these are, I think, clear conversations that we like to have out in the open, when we're talking to clients, because it's not a secret. And, you know, maybe there are partnerships and, business plans that can be put together that, you know, draw together some ways to partner on projects or pipelines of projects to where you can address those issues together as a team versus, standing in your corners and worrying about those items. Because, I mean, the owners understand this too, and they're, you know, they're obviously keenly aware that these problems exist.
That's an incredible statistic that you need three times the bandwidth to be able to handle the projects that are probably coming out over the next, I don't know, 5 to 10 years or something like that is probably what the...
Yep.
So
that's really the driving force. I want to make sure I answered the question. That's really the driving force. Is it 1 in 8 or 1 in 10, 3 in 10, 7 in 10? Mm-hmm. Can somebody out there build it?
Right. And if they can, chances are it's going to be there, especially if there's international money in play, right?
Right.
If you're outside of just the typical developers, the typical folks we deal with on a daily basis. So that's a good problem to have. Like, I guess if we're in the market and we feel like we're established, I know we've won a job. We'll talk about that job in a little bit, but let's talk about like how to attract the people. Like if we have the relationships and we've got Rob, I mean, Rob's a great guy. If you're listening, you've never met Rob, fly to Denver, meet Rob, super cool guy. I actually did the new employee orientation that he sat in right over here in the Innovation Center, maybe 2 years ago when I first met him, and tremendous, tremendous guy. So how do you and Rob go about trying to find the right people? I know beforehand you and I talked and it was kind of like, it's really hard to get a job here, right? There's different hoops you have to jump through, and we kind of vet our potential employees really, I don't want to say tough, but we put them through the ringer to make sure they're going to be a right fit. So how do we continue to attract high quality people that can help us be a part of putting our money where our mouth is and go build these jobs?
I think the first thing is getting message out there that we do this, mm-hmm. right? Flint Coal Renewable Energy is here. We have work, we're building teams. And this is something that we can, attract potential employees. Where we've had the most success, is really, the early hires that we've had, them actually getting that, being ingrained in the culture for a little while and being able to speak to it after, have been through multiple, maybe other organizations and the ups and downs of the market. When they come here from outside and they see how, the Flint Co and Alberici companies do business, and they see the day to day and they meet the people, it's like, everybody talks about their people, and they should, because anybody that doesn't recognize their people as their company's biggest assets, it's on the wrong planet. But getting...
Amen. Sorry.
I think taking the expertise of people like Rob, people like Sean Mangan. If you haven't met Sean Mangan, there's another guy that you should fly to Oklahoma City and meet. Mm-hmm. You'll be up all night listening to stories, but they're funny and they're great guy.
Putting it on the list right now.
Yeah, there you go. Hearing these people that have all this experience actually speak to, hey, they might be telling you this in the interview. They might be telling you this at the job fair. I've been here and I've never experienced anything like it. You can't sell anybody anything more strongly than hearing it from those people that have that respect, that are in the market and come and say, hey, I've been around, worked for some great companies. This is a place to come work. Mm-hmm. And I think the other angle that we have is, we're an established company, ENR top 40. We're not a startup that could potentially, go bankrupt if one project were to, if we were to struggle on a project. I think we get a lot of feedback about that, hey, I'm worried that, we're going to have a bad project on my current job and, things, I might be out of work. I think we can lend that stability of a corporation when we're entering into a bit of a new territory for us. So that's very attractive. And really where we have the most success is you know, people that come that have the experience of working with some of the excellent resources that we brought in so far. You know, this industry, it's like everything else. Construction, it seems like, you know, a huge industry. It's not, right?
Yeah, that's right.
You go to some of these shows, there's 60,000 people. Oh, I know that guy. I know that guy.
Yeah.
I've seen, you know, it's very intimate at the end of the day. And, you know, getting to know people and understanding how they work, it has been, I think, a lot more instrumental and valuable to us to bring in some of the key individuals that we've been able to bring in. And that's what we need to continue to leverage.
Mm-hmm. I love what you said about being established and being a company that's going to stand the test of time, right? Over 100 years in operation across the enterprise, I mean, approaching or exceeding $4 billion worth of work this year. I mean, that's not like a mom and pop startup and, hey, you know, meet me over here and we get lunch and I'll take you in my truck over to see the site that might be something, right? I mean,
yeah.
We're like definitely established and definitely all in on it. It's funny you said about having the small world. When you said that, I think about the first time we met, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago, we're at a conference and we're in New Orleans. And I was kind of new going to the conference. I'm like, who am I going to know at this place, right? And showed up and lo and behold, the guy that taught my Structures 1 class at Texas A&M, Richard Burt, you know, he's over here. I was like, oh my gosh, I can't. He's at Auburn now and teaching Structures over there. But it is a small industry, right? And it's awesome to hear that guys like Rob or Sean are making these or having these conversations with formidable players saying, hey, look, man, this is a really good place to work. And as a guy that's worked here 22 years, I can attest to that, right? It's one of the reasons I'm still work here. It's we're always forward thinking, right? It's the reason we have this podcast. It's something that we feel like is, you know, adds to the value of the company and to the people that are going to listen. So that's my plug also for you. You can cut that and send it to, you can use it along the way. But so tell us.
If I could just, want to add to that point.
Please do.
I think another benefit that we have is our approach to building up the market. You know, we can all attest to the fact that, you know, the Alberici and Flinco companies are very calculated and conservative when we, you know, with respect to growth. When you look at the potential growth in the solar PV market, I mean, it's like I said, exponential. It's almost hard to get your head around. There is we could approach this from a completely different perspective of what we're going to go out and we're going to get 10 clients and we're going to get 10 jobs and we're going to go out and hire all these people. And we're just going to, you know, 7 jobs will go well and 3 of them won't. And hopefully at the end of the day that, you know, levels out to, you know, a black bottom line.
Yeah.
But you know, that's not how we do business. That's not how we approach growth. And I think it's a little bit of a breath of fresh air for people to hear that, hey, you know, we're not going to go from zero to $2 billion solar organization in the next 2 years. We're going to approach this in a calculated, conservative fashion. We're going to get the right clients. We're going to get the right work. We're going to hire the right people. And we're going to, you know, do this the Alberici and Flinco way. Mm-hmm. And I think that's also reassuring for people to hear, prospective employees.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. It's not just a fly by the seat of your pants, like the fact that it took y'all 9 months to do the research and do the study and say, hey, we think this will work. Right. And then being able to put the people in place to put our money where our mouth is. Right. And say, hey, we're going to put the people in place. We're going to hire the right people and we're going to do it smart. So here we've had this in operation here a little over 3 years. And so understand we got our first win. Understand just a little bit about the job. Can you tell us about it and kind of how we got connected with the client and really kind of where we are in the process?
Yeah. And, you know, this kind of dials back to my comment earlier about the relationships. So Sean Mangan, interestingly enough, had a former relationship with one of the vice presidents at Adapture Renewables and was able to get us an introduction to meet our team that was established at that time. And, you know, really based on his and Rob's, I think, reputation and their direct knowledge of their ability to produce results, got us in the door to start looking at and budgeting some work. And that just, that kind of was the little snowball at the top of the mountain. And, you know, as that snowball got rolling, I think we were, you know, obviously very hungry and realized that, you know, as we started to meet, you know, some of the leadership and understand their culture and what was important to them, we just became more and more aligned and understood that, okay, this really is a client that, you know, we see eye to eye on, that, we feel like we could, you know, share in each other's successes. And we got ourselves from, you know, a budgetary, you know, operation through a firm fixed price effort. And we're able to get to, you know, a limited contract at the end of 2023. So all in, from introduction to that limited contract was around about 6 months, maybe 7 months.
Okay.
So again, it was not an overnight relationship, despite the fact that we had, you know, very good, you know, inroads with this client. But at the end of the day, it was developed based off a relationship, ideas. This client at the time was going through an acquisition of the projects. So we were, you know, kind of on standby trying to help them understand what things would look like, you know, from an EPC perspective and help them get through that process. And then ultimately, you know, work through this fixed price, contracting effort, that wrapped up toward the end of last year. I think it boils down to us really telling them what we would do based on our understanding of what they wanted and then meeting those commitments. So I think that's, you know, as a company, what we really pride ourselves on too, right? Our integrity, our doing what we say we'll do. So I think that was really instrumental on in moving that ball forward.
I'd love to hear that you have, it's relationship driven, right? So many people in this industry, they want to come in and sit down with an owner the first time and say, hey, we're going to build this job for you. We're going to build it. This is our capabilities, blah, blah, blah. And it's kind of like, yeah, that's not the right way to do it, right? You establish a relationship, you cultivate it. And when there's fruit to bear, you can help, you can be a part of that fruit bearing. So that's awesome. So good job to Rob and Sean and your team for making that happen. So when you get a job, can you give me just like the layman's term of like from when contract award to really when we turn on and start generating power and can put power back on the grid or into somebody's facility. What does that look like just overall? How could you describe that for me?
Yeah. So the nature of our initial contract with Adaptor Renewables were two limited engineering contracts. So Adaptor, by the time we achieved our limited notice period, they had progressed to 30% design.
Okay.
So our limited notice to proceed that we executed at the end of last year was for two projects in Illinois. One is called Cook's Mill and the other is called Crooked Creek. The nature of that initial contract was to progress the 30% design to a 60% design stage. So we had a fixed fee to progress that engineering cost while we were still working through design optimization and really working through our finalizing of our overall EPC cost. Mm-hmm. So by the time that limited notice was let in December, we had budgetary numbers still being worked through and with a target of, you know, by the end of the first quarter, having that that firm fixed price in place. So we worked through that limited notice through that 60% design stage. And in April of this past year, we were able to come to an agreement on the full engineering, procurement, and construction costs for the entirety of these two projects. And the first stage of that, obviously, was to take what we had progressed at the 60%, pull that through a 90, and then ultimately an IFC design process, while starting procurement as we were able to throughout that design progression. So. In these particular projects, the owner is providing the actual solar panels themselves. We are providing all the other infrastructure and components within the PV plant. So whether it's H-pile that supports the tracking system themselves, the power control systems with the inverters and transformers, all the cabling and so forth. That is all being procured by our EPC team. So there's a pretty intensive and costly effort up front to get all that stuff ordered and work through delivery times. Obviously, we still are challenged with some of the backlogs and jam ups with respect to particularly electrical componentry. So that started immediately following the award stage, and that led up to where we are right now. We have been on site for approximately 2.5 weeks at Cook's Mill.
Nice.
We've got about 10 folks out there getting the job site set up, construction trailers built, put together, construction roads built, and we've started part of that grading process. Excuse me. To get some of the undulating areas of the project site flattened out. All in, you go back to probably May or June last year, from that point in time when this thing was an idea to when we actually started on the site, it was, 14 months. It was a pretty long process.
Yeah.
Now, I think this is potentially unique in the market. I think a lot of these things are a lot more closely pulled together, but a lot of that part was relationship building, right? I mean, we spent a lot of time making sure that we were aligned with respect to who we're working with.
So how big of a site is Cook's Mill?
The Cook's Mill project has 550 disturbed acres. So, and the Crooked Creek project, very, very similar, I think right around 500.
Okay.
A lot of big numbers for us. I think if you look at the market in general for utility scale, these projects are becoming bigger and bigger. You hear sometimes now about gigawatt size projects. I mean, these are on 5, 6, 7,000 acres. So, the size becomes challenging to get your head around. But not to take away anything from our project, 128 megawatts DC.
Wow.
That equates to approximately 240,000 solar panels, 38,000 driven H piles. The quantity of some of this stuff, you can imagine that's where the complexity really enters into it. You think that you got to deliver and shake out and stage and, carefully, these panels, you got 240,000 panels that have, a glass surface. You drop one or, move your forklift in the wrong direction, that one's in the trash.
Yep.
So it's fast paced, a lot of logistics planning. And that's really where the complexity enters into it. You have to be, really be a good planner. You have to execute on your plan, and you have to be capable of pivoting and have a plan B and a plan C when plan A kind of goes south. Because if you're planning your work based on 30 or 40 or 50 trucks coming in every week, and 10 of those don't make it, well, you got to be able to pivot and adjust your plan based on that.
Those numbers are staggering. Like you think 550 acres, right? And that's one of the questions I was going to ask you is there a better place in the country to try to build a place like this? And we can get to that in a second, but you think 550 acres, 38,000 H piles. I mean, I don't know, even you start thinking about the time frame to do that. Like how many can you drive a day? How many rigs do you need? How accurate does the spacing have to be? Those are all things I'm thinking in my head on the H-pile operations that we've done along the railroad years and years ago that I did. Think about how many piles you could drive every day and how accurate they needed to be and doing the layout for those and checking the plumbness and all that kind of stuff. My mind is going bananas in the background thinking about that and getting everything level. I'm sure everything has to be level so that the panels sit somewhat, and I'm sure they pivot to rotate with the sun to be able to catch as much light as you can. All that's
apparently you've already got this figured out, so I'm not sure what you're doing for the next couple of months, but we could use you on the site.
Seems like a pretty easy job. Put me in, coach. No, that's all exciting. So when you think about lead times, like you mentioned, just the gear, I mean, anything that we're buying these days, like the project I'm on now is a 4,000 amp service, and it's between 40 and 60 weeks, depending on if you want the tiebreaker or if you need a fed from each end or it's, dual feed, one feed, that kind of stuff. What's the lead times like that y'all are seeing or that you're dealing with?
So luckily on this, on these two projects, Adapture had been very forward looking and placed orders for the high voltage side of the equation. Nice. Over a year ago. So the high voltage circuit breakers and the step up transformers were ordered and already have secured delivery dates for the project.
Oh, nice.
And luckily enough, we've been, you know, again, this goes back to relationships. You know, we've been able to secure some equipment that, you know, traditionally may have, you know, may have had, you know, much longer lead times. Our PCS units, our inverter units, probably the longest lead time, sitting at around 36 weeks.
Okay.
So, you know, the procurement of those pieces of equipment really were kind of the teetering point on how we scheduled the project, depending on when the availability of those was, you know, targeted at. So luckily enough, the cable wiring, some of the other electrical components, not as harsh of a lead time issues. And, you know, we had a forward leaning owner that was able to, you know, secure some of this long lead time stuff far in advance and then really, you know, kind of fit together with the construction schedule that we were able to assemble. So, but when you step back and look at it, I think the transformers were 82 week delivery time. So
that's a long time.
Yeah.
It's one of those jobs, you know, we do the lean pull planning and that kind of stuff. It's really nice to have that end date of when your inverters are going to be here or your high voltage lineup or the transformers, that kind of stuff, and kind of work backwards. And then, like you said, it's really a planning thing, right? You think about all those piles and getting them all there and how you're going to get them staged and all those types of things. Complicated. You go from real quick from thinking that's easy to highly complicated in half a second when those numbers started coming out. So, well, as we continue to build and as we continue to look for these type projects, what are we going to do as an enterprise to help push the industry forward? Are there things that we're doing that are forward thinking to help owners, to help developers along the way? What are some of those things?
You know, I kind of touched on one earlier, but I think we're really trying to build up our internal expertise in the design area. So our capabilities internally to be able to jump into situations where we may be able to provide some really unique and design level guidance, I think is really important. We found that to be pretty instrumental in some of the relationships we've started to develop. And, you know, we continue to kind of build up that expertise in-house. I think traditionally, you know, our firm has leaned a lot on the outside, right? And hey, we got good partners. Well, that partner's busy now. Let's go to this guy. Well, they're all busy. Okay, well, how do I quickly react to a client that says, I need somebody to evaluate this? So I think we determined pretty early on that, you know, having this expertise in-house is really going to be a differentiator and allow us to be nimble and react to clients' wants and needs. It's so far that's held true. And I think we're going to continue to establish our capabilities in that area. I think also it really what we're going to have to do is expand our thinking about what a contract or an owner looks like. I think that the idea of partnerships and how that expands our commercial relationships with owners, I think that's an idea that we're looking to pursue. Hey, we know we have these restrictions. Still, we've got commodity, you know, backlogs. We've got labor restrictions. Owners are looking at this going, I can build this stuff, but I need a commitment from a builder.
Yeah.
So what does that look like from an overall partnership of, well, if you got these three projects and here's how they're staged, we can commit to you these teams that can come in and build these projects. So what does that look like from a commercial and partnering, you know, contractual relationship. I think that's really, I think, how we're going to start looking to approach, you know, some of our clients in the future to guarantee that buildability capacity, you know, long-term. I think it's been a pretty fascinating experience internally. So we've actually started to develop some of our younger internal construction folks, both on the Flinko and the Alberici side, and kind of threw them in the fire. Mm-hmm. And having some just young, fresh eyes on what we're doing has really, I think, opened up people's consciousness of what we're doing and why we've always done this, and are there other ways to do things. We've got some really talented young individuals within our organization, maybe within that 3 to 5 years of experience range, that are real go-getters, and that, you know, have the wherewithal to question why do we do this? Or why is this happening like this? Yeah. Can't we just do it this way?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that makes sense. So even, you know, having that young but outside viewpoint on the industry, it's been very helpful too. And you know, these folks are also very passionate about it. Mm-hmm. They're not just looking at this as a job. Mm-hmm. They look at it as a career to advance. And what we're really trying to do is, you know, help develop these individuals that have the Flinko and the Alberici DNA, mm-hmm. become the leaders of this group and mm-hmm. expand in that fashion.
Yeah, I love to hear that, because as we bring younger folks into the industry, they've got to be a part of the team, right? And they've got to have a voice on the team, or they're going to pack up and they're going to go somewhere else.
100%.
Right? Yeah. And they want to be heard. They want to have ideas. And it's great to hear that those ideas are valued, and that those folks are allowed at the table when you're making those decisions and can question something, and everybody go, why did we never look at it like that?
Yep.
What a great idea. And hearing about design, bringing some of the design in-house, I think that's great too. There's nothing worse than being a pre-con guy and sitting in front of the owner and them asking you a question that deals with design, and you're kind of like, well, we got to check in with somebody else that's on the team, and it might be a week or it could be 4 or 5 days. And meanwhile, in the back of your head, you're going, hey, I know so-and-so's schedule. Hey, they're going to be able to look at it probably in the next day or so. We're going to be able to have you a couple options, and then we can pick a path forward, right? Because I'm sure some of these projects it's important for speed to market as well, right? It's not like, hey, we got 6 years to do this. It's kind of like, hey, this needs to be implemented because we're either going to have to meet this code in 2 years or we're going to need this operational. And we'd much rather do this right here than pay the fines or pay the whatever to meet the environmental restrictions.
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, most of the opportunities I think that we'll come across and that we'll have to evaluate are going to be much quicker, mm-hmm. and we will have to react.
Yeah.
And having that expertise in house, I mean, there's nuanced changes in the design of these plants, mm-hmm. that can save, you know, if you're talking about buying 40,000 H piles, well, if you save a little bit of weight on that design, you're saving yourself a lot of tonnage of steel.
Yeah.
So having that perspective in house with that, you know, ownership of, I need to look at it from this perspective, it drives the design process, from a bit of a different angle. So, we definitely see that as a win.
Yeah, and the owner sees that too, and they're like, wow, I've got a partner here. I don't just have a builder. I've got a partner. I've got somebody that's going to sit here at the table with me. They're going to help me out. They're going to help us provide the best product we can. So
100%.
That's super exciting. Yeah. So any parting thoughts, anything that you want to impart on the listeners before we close up? Or
yeah, it's a really exciting time in the company and in the industry. You know, we see funding through tax incentives that's been really established long term, and that has really put some, I think, air of confidence behind the nature of the longevity of what we're getting involved in. And, you know, like I said, you know, Flinko and Alberici don't enter into these markets lightly. And I was going to mention before, I took a lot of slack for the time it took for us to make a decision. Go to talk to somebody like, you're still evaluating that? I thought, don't you just say yes or no? So, I think that there's an excitement. There's a bit of a startup atmosphere, and I want to touch on your point about everybody having a say. Mm-hmm. It's pretty cool in a group of 20 people. Small enough to where, you know, we're telling, hey, this is your job. You got to go do this. Do it your way. Figure mm-hmm. it out. Mm-hmm. We're here to help. We got this huge organization behind you, but I want you to be the guy. And people taking ownership of this, that it's such a new stage. I think it's everybody has looked at that as a challenge and an excitement. And there's a real aura of, you know, just what's to come.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's really, really, you know, I'm very grateful and humbled to be part of it, because, you know, it's not every day that the company changes directions and moves into a new, down a new path. So, I would say, you know, there's big things to come. We aren't going to, like I said, we aren't going to grow, to a $2 billion organization overnight. But we are looking to grow, lots of opportunities, lots of, ways that people can, you know, raise their voice and have a say in how we do business in the future. So, it's an exciting time, and I'm very grateful to be a part of it.
Yeah. So if you're listening and these things that Mike's talking about, 3x, three times what we have today,
that's right,
or it's going to grow over the next couple of years. You're looking for an exciting project. You're looking for an established company, a company that is, I would say, full throttle, headed down this path, saying, hey, we're definitely going to be a part of this. You know, we're looking for good people. Like, you can find Mike's info on the website. You can find it on the Alberisi website, on the Flint Co. website. You know, reach out. Let him know that you want to be a part of the team. So as we continue to grow, Mike, I wish you and Rob and the team the absolute best. And I appreciate what you're doing, not only for the enterprise, but what you're doing just for the world in general. So
it means a lot, Dan. Really happy to have this opportunity to talk through the excitement in our market today. So we're really grateful to be invited out here. So, yeah. So thanks again for the voice.
Absolutely. It's great to have you on. It's good to see you as always. And thanks for being here.
Thank you. It's been such a long